Hello and welcome to season two of the Black Hole podcast entitled Femme Party, which is also the title of a book that I've written, and I'm reading it chapter by chapter, episode by episode for season two. Today I'll be reading chapter 11, and before I begin reading, I always precursor by saying any money raised or any profit from this book will be used to form a technology company similar to the one proposed in the book, and to build a solar farm in my hometown. So you can find the book by going to Amazon Kindle and searching Femme Party, or go to either of my websites. You'll find a link on them. That's plotm.com. That's plot, the letter m.com, or mitchformayor.com. That's Mitch, the number four, mayor.com. So let's begin. Chapter 11. Hillary is sitting on a couch in her home in Pittsburgh. She picks up a remote and hits a button. From the track lighting directly above the couch, an Ethernet cable slowly descends. When it reaches the couch, Hillary hits the button again and plugs the wire into her laptop. Mitch comes down the stairs dressed in a tuxedo. Mitch says, "How's it going?" Hillary says, "I'm printing your speech for the Pittsburgh Restaurateurs Association we worked on together." Mitch says, "Great, this new app I'm proposing makes so much sense. I'm glad we were able to come up with it together." Hillary says, "It's going to help feed people and reduce food waste. I hope they decide to incubate the program. Good luck, honey." Mitch says, "I'll see you later tonight at the banquet." Mitch takes a Uber downtown to his office and walks over to the convention center when it is time for his speech before the Pittsburgh Restaurateurs Association. He stands at a podium while many well-dressed business owners sip cocktails around large tables. Mitch says, "Thank you for having me tonight. As you know, the city of Pittsburgh has accomplished quite a bit since I have taken office. I don't like to toot my own horn, but I consider myself an innovator. That is why, with your help, I am hoping to launch a new food brand in Pittsburgh called Pittsburgh Foods. I have partnered with Carnegie Mellon University in the past, and now we are at it again with a new app and labeling process. CBU has been working on small radio frequency chips for food labeling for many years now. I have convinced them to use them in conjunction with an app my company wants to develop. The new labels with RF chips and the Pittsburgh Foods app will cut down on food waste and bring our food supply chain to a more locally sourced model. There will be incentives for restaurant owners to contribute to the app, but where you can really help is opening your doors to independent contractors or a second staff. What we are trying to do is harness your professional kitchens to produce food for our grocery stores. During the hours when your restaurant is closed, we want to pair you with a subcontractor that will use ingredients you are currently ordering for your menu and package them for sale at local grocery stores. You may also have the option to staff a midnight shift yourself and keep the profit from products sold at grocery stores for yourself. The subcontractor route means you will receive rent from the subcontractor and they will place orders with the restaurant owners, so you may receive larger bulk product discounts. Basically, the midnight shift will pickle or package the ingredients already on your menu and then label them for sale in grocery stores. The grocery stores stock the Pittsburgh Foods ingredients with the RF labels and sell them like other products. A customer takes the product home, and as they put their groceries away, they scan the label using the Pittsburgh Foods app. Here's the really innovative part of the process. As the different products come upon their expiration date, the app emails the customer with that certain products are about to expire and offers different menu options they can make with the remaining ingredients. That's the second way you can contribute. You, the restaurateur, will be sent different lists of ingredients and can contribute recipes through the app for which you will be compensated. The Pittsburgh Foods app tracks each grocery's expiration date and warns customers when they are getting close to expiration, then sends recipe options to use all of the food before it expires. As I said, this will greatly reduce food waste and will be another source of revenue for restaurants. It also means fresher ingredients and less preservatives in our food. While we don't anticipate these groceries being less expensive at first, they will be healthier than other sources. Once we have established this brand citywide, the cost should drop as well. We are just building off of the great work other organizations have been doing for years in this city to reduce food waste. Our program helps reduce waste of food that has already been opened at the household. I hope you will consider becoming part of this experiment, and I want to thank you once again for inviting me to speak at your banquet. There is a table at the rear of the dining room with information about the app, and keep up the great work. Emma Strone is riding the blue streak at the amusement park on Conneaut Lake. There is a camera mounted to the front of the old wooden roller coaster. As the train leaves the platform, the chain for the first hill can be heard rattling in the background. Emma says, "Welcome to Conneaut Lake Park. We're about to go on a wild ride on the blue streak. This is the largest ride at the park, and it may be the oldest. Join our team of celebrities as we attempt to convert this old park into the world's first zero-carbon amusement park." The coaster lets loose at the top of the hill and plunges down the rickety rails. The train completes its route and returns to the station. A team of hair and makeup people wait on the platform. Emma exits the train and is surrounded by people prepping her for the next segment. A production assistant says, "Emma, you are needed down at the beach for your segment with Racing for Change." Emma makes her way past the Devil's Den Funhouse. Her team follows closely behind as they pass a long row of carnival games. She walks across the amphitheater where many bands have played in the past. Emma approaches a camera crew that is set up on a dock where two compressed air-powered pontoon boats are lined up. Both boats are facing out towards the lake, and a large buoy can be seen a quarter mile away. One of the boats has a hardtop roof over half of it. On top of the roof, Hollywood actor Johnny Depp is finishing a segment for the camera. Johnny is decked out in full costume as one of his most popular roles, the pirate captain Max Sparrow. The entertainment company Disney allowed the character to appear in the groundbreaking television show Racing for Change. As Johnny climbs down from the top of the boat, the camera crew resets to shoot the beginning of the race. The captain of the other boat is none other than Hollywood actor Wesley Snipes. Both actors take their positions behind the steering wheels of their boat. Production assistants hold each boat in place. Emma sits backwards on the rear of the jet ski that is backed up against the dock between the two pontoon boats. The camera is set up and zooms in on Emma as the jet ski motors out onto the lake 50 yards. Emma holds a scarf in each hand with her arms above her head. The camera zooms out so that the boats and actors can be seen. Emma drops her arms quickly and the boats leave the dock. Only the waves lapping the front of the boats and a low hum can be heard as the two pontoon boats motor towards the buoy. Both boats are even as they approach the buoy, but now the moment of truth comes as one boat must take the wider turn around the buoy. Wellesley hugs the buoy as he turns right, and Johnny turns left so that the two boats are on a collision course. At the last possible second, Johnny cuts the wheel and takes the wider route around the buoy. The sides of the two boats scrape as they head in opposite directions. A floating bumper tied to the side of Wellesley's boat snaps off under the pressure and flies off into the lake. After the two boats are clear of each other, they correct course and head back toward the dock. The jet ski with Emma remains idling in place. Wellesley pulls away as they approach the jet ski, which is the finish line. Wellesley crosses first and quickly reverses his motor to slow the boat as it comes back to the dock. Johnny follows suit as they maneuver back to the dock. As the production assistants tie off the boats, Johnny looks over at Wellesley and says, "You were pulling some vampire tricks." Wellesley retorts, "You call yourself a captain?" Mitch Miller is sitting at a table in a courtroom in Pittsburgh. His attorney, Emily Huddick, is working the floor as she completes her opening statements of a trial involving major cable providers Comcast and Verizon Vios. Emily says, "And in conclusion, we intend to prove to this court that both Comcast and Verizon Vios released toxic radio frequency in the atmosphere near my client's home, which caused him physical symptoms. These cable carriers began providing customers with standard equipment that had wireless wave transmission built into it automatically. Rather than customers having the choice as to whether they wanted a wireless router in their home, they were provided the equipment standard. This caused more of my clients' neighbors to emit wireless waves from their homes and more exposure of these waves to my client, resulting in physical symptoms such as muscle twitching, sleeplessness, night sweats, and convulsive tremors after intense physical exertion. These cable providers knew of the possible dangers of transmitting wireless waves, but decided to expand the use of this equipment rather than simply providing the internet with a non-wireless capable modem. We are hoping you, the jury, will hold these cable providers accountable for the physical and mental damage they inflicted upon my client and others. The team of attorneys representing Comcast and Verizon spend the rest of the day trying to throw the case out on procedural technicalities. The judge wants to hear the case fully and see where it leads. Emily Huddick presents a series of experts, including ham radio technicians, that explain the dangers of invisible spectrum waves such as radio waves. The defense provides its own experts that claim these waves are harmless according to popular science. The second day of the trial begins with a large television screen being wheeled out onto the floor for the judge and jury to see. Emily makes her way to the television screen with a small mini DV tape and mini DV tape deck she connects to the television. She inserts the tape and cues up the video. Emily says, "By the end of the first year, Comcast offered wireless routers as standard equipment. My client began displaying these symptoms." It should also be noted that this was the same year that Verizon's cable company Vios became a major competitor in Pittsburgh market. Vios also offered wireless router as standard equipment. What I'm about to play for you is a tape that has never been captured on a computer. This video was made using a digital camera that takes these small tapes rather than a memory card and would require a deck much like the one connected to the television in order to transfer the video onto a computer. My client made this tape to capture his physical symptoms. The symptoms had persisted for nearly 8 months, and he wanted to document them in an effort to warn other governments of the dangers of these wireless waves. Mitch Miller set a camera up on a tripod and captured himself hyperventilating at his desk in his own office. As we stated before, my client experienced a convulsive tremor that would overcome his body when he exerted himself physically. As he became more physically fit over those 8 months, he found that the most consistent way to display his symptoms was to hyperventilate himself by breathing heavily for over a minute. By over-oxygenating his blood, his body became excited and the tremor would overcome his body. On the tape, my client talks us through each episode. He documented his symptoms on a Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for 1 week in August. This tape has been edited to better display the symptoms and speed up this exhibit. Emily presses play on the tape deck, and Mitch can be seen on the screen behind his wooden desk. He introduces the date and time, and then the video cuts to him hyperventilating himself. He breathes heavily and steadily to excite his body. After he quits the heavy breathing, he breathes slowly for a few seconds, and then his body convulses on the screen. You can see it as the convulsion works its way up his back and into his neck. His head and shoulders twitch as the convulsion overcomes him. Within seconds, the convulsion has ended. Mitch describes what happened, and then the video cuts him, explaining the date and time again. Again, Mitch hyperventilates, and the convulsive tremor follows. Mitch gives the final date and time. The tape shows Mitch behind his desk hyperventilating, followed by yet another convulsive tremor. Emily stops the tape. Emily says, "As you can see, my client had physical symptoms that he wanted a physician to verify. My client was unable to find a physician that would do the appropriate tests on him to show his symptoms. This is why he appealed to the international community. Unable to find help from them, Mitch has kept his tape a secret until now. My client has never had these symptoms before. He exercises on a regular basis, and these tremors had never occurred before." The team of lawyers from Comcast and Vios call in a doctor to dispel the symptoms documented on the tape. The doctor says that the medications, like the ones Mitch has prescribed, could cause the symptoms. Emily cross-examines the doctor and explains that Mitch had been on the medication for 5 years prior to the onset of the tremors. She asks why he didn't experience these symptoms sooner if the medication was the cause of the symptoms. Emily says, "I would like to introduce my second exhibit. My client also noticed that random muscles throughout his body would twitch at different times. He began keeping a log of each muscle twitch and the time they occurred. He kept this log for more than 3 months, hoping he could show a domestic or foreign physician who would help him. We have made copies of the log for the jury. This time, Comcast and Vios call a neurologist to the stand. The neurologist claims that the muscle twitches could also be caused by psychiatric medications. Emily once again cross-examines and asks why these symptoms would occur when there had been no increase in the dosage of the medication for 5 years. Emily says, I would like to call a witness in this case. I call to the stand the spouse of Mitch Miller, Mrs. Hillary Kohler. Hillary enters the courtroom and makes her way to the witness stand. The bailiff approaches and swears her in. Hillary takes a sip of water as Emily begins to ask her questions. Emily says, you have been married to the plaintiff for more than 10 years and romantically involved for even longer. Is that correct? Hillary says, that is correct. We have been together since college. Emily says, during the year in question, how many times would you approximate you were intimate with my client? Hillary says, about once a week, so about 40 or 50 times. Emily says, and did you notice a convulsive tremor overcome Mitch's body after each time you were intimate? Hillary says, yes, it was very strange. Emily says, did it happen every time? Hillary says, yes, for approximately 1 year, the tremors would occur after intimacy. Emily says, did you ever notice anything like it in any of the years prior? Hillary says, no, and I am fairly certain I would notice. Emily says, where did the tremor seem to originate? Hillary says, the tremors seem to originate in the spine and would greatly affect the upper back. Emily says, do you believe that wireless waves cause the physical symptoms experienced by your husband? Hillary says, I believe it's possible. Emily says, I have no further questions. Hillary does well during cross-examination. She handles herself professionally, even as the defense lawyer substitutes the word intimate with other technical terms. They ask why Hillary didn't experience the symptoms as well. She explained that her husband may be more sensitive. Only Mitch would make the argument that she does twitch in her sleep if he were ever called to the stand. Day 3 of the trial begins the following day. Mitch is dressed in a suit and tie, and his wife is seated in the gallery. Emily Huddock makes her way onto the floor and addresses the jury. Emily says, today I would like to call a series of witnesses related to the class in this class action suit against Comcast and Verizon. First, I want to call Ms. Kim Shaderton of the Southwest Pennsylvania Veterinary Association. Kim Shaderton approaches the stand and is sworn in by the bailiff. Emily says, Ms. Shaderton, can you tell us the first time you met Mr. Miller? Kim says, yes, it was about 3 years ago. Emily says, and what has been the nature of your relationship? Kim says, Mitch approached me about beginning a research study to prove that wireless waves were causing cancer and tumors. He explained that the powers that be would never field a solid study using the human medical community, so he was hoping to do a confidential veterinarian study. He asked if we could discreetly talk to a pet owner after the death of their pet. Mitch offered to pay for the cost of cremation or animal disposal if the owner allowed us to do a full autopsy and someday publish the findings. Mitch said he would pay for every autopsy our association did and compile the findings through his company. He also explained that each owner would be compensated if they filled out a questionnaire that disclosed their address. Emily says, and what was on this questionnaire? Kim says, I can't remember everything, but some of it was helpful to the veterinarian community. It was questions like, what brand food do you feed the animal and what type of litter do you use? Other questions were related to Mitch's study, such as, do you have Wi-Fi in your home and do you pick up any of your neighbor's Wi-Fi signal? Emily says, how many autopsies would you say your organization did over the past 3 years? Kim says, I would say over 6,000, but we released all the statistics to Mitch's company. After a cross-examination, Kim Shaderton steps down from the stand. Emily calls another witness, a technology expert from within Mitch's company named Merle Taggart. He is sworn in and the trial proceeds. Emily says, Mr. Taggart, is it true that you compiled all of the statistics gathered for this study over the past 3 years? Merle says, that is correct. I compiled all of the statistics and also mapped out each animal's primary residence within the city of Pittsburgh. Emily says, What if an animal lived with someone in an apartment that moved a lot? Merle says that was noted in the statistics, but we found that most of the animals in the study changed addresses very little. Emily says, can you briefly summarize your findings? Merle says, sure. I summarized it all in my paper, which you have entered into evidence, but I can try to go over it briefly. We found that animals, especially mammals, that lived within 1/4 mile of a large transmission tower for wireless waves were 50% more likely to contract cancer or have tumors than the control we used, which was an animal that lived in a rural setting and was more than 5 miles from a tower. The percentage drops incrementally the further the animal was from the transmission tower, but overall, animals within a city were, on average, 20% more likely to have cancer as a cause of death or have tumors located within the body. The tumors were not always cancerous, but sometimes the tumors were the cause of death. The correlations are harder to map out with Wi-Fi because many who don't have Wi-Fi in their house in the city do have cross-contamination from a neighbor's Wi-Fi transmitter. We found that animals, especially mammals, that live in a home where there is Wi-Fi were 25% more likely to have either tumors or cancer than a house without Wi-Fi. We also found that households that switched to the cable company's standard equipment had animals with slightly more occurrences of cancer and tumors than those households that kept their original equipment for as long as possible. Overall, we found that the more exposure to wireless an animal has, the more likely it is to contract tumors or cancer. Emily says, was there a specific type of tumor or cancer that you looked for? Merle says, we counted all tumors and types of cancer we could identify, but tumors and cancer affecting the central nervous system and brain received special notation. Emily says, how much more likely were cases of brain and central nervous system damage? Merle says, compared to the control, urban animals were 35% more likely to contract tumors or cancer affecting the brain and central nervous system. Emily calls a few more witnesses that interpret the data compiled by Mitch's study. She ends the trial with an emotional, heartfelt closing statement. It is very clear that why Mitch has chosen her for his attorney in this class action suit. The jury deliberates for a few days, and then the verdict is read. The judge hands down the ruling. Outside on the steps of the courthouse, Emily makes a statement and then hands Mitch the podium. Mitch says, today we got a decision in the Mitch Miller and Animal Owners of Pittsburgh versus Comcast and Verizon Vios class action suit. The ruling has come down in our favor, and these two companies have until the end of this year to relinquish all of their existing cable infrastructure to the city of Pittsburgh. The city will provide cable television and phone service for free to every household in Pittsburgh, as well as offer high-speed internet at a lower-than-market price with the hope of it someday being free as well. This is just another step in someday eliminating these toxic wireless waves in our city. This will allow us to compare cases of brain cancer in an area without wireless with the rest of the population to prove these waves are toxic once and for all. We have the proof with our animal study, but the naysayers will say it doesn't apply to humans. I'll take questions. The reporter says, how will you provide free cable service when you just took on a company that includes major cable network NDC? Mitch says, Pittsburgh will offer 3 free C-SPAN channels, 2 free Pennsylvania state government channels, and 2 free local government channels. Basically, it will be free to keep tabs on the government, which is what every city should provide. People can pay a monthly fee to add each channel we make available in addition to the government channel. And because we will have collective bargaining, they will be able to pay for only the channels they want instead of having to pay for different cable packages. In addition, our cable box will have a landline jack on the front of it that you can plug a phone into. The whole cable network will be facilitated by investing in our 5 Community College of Allegheny County campuses throughout the surrounding area. We will invest in the equipment needed to keep this cable system running for high-speed internet and offer multiple majors at these campuses involving the management and maintenance of a cable network of this size. The reporter says, how are you able to get a judgment in the order of relinquishing an entire cable network? Mitch says, it is simple. Much of our emergency structure relies on wireless waves and mobile telephones. If we are ever to eliminate these wireless waves, we must have a hardwired emergency system provided by the city. If everyone has a free landline in their house, we will be able to track down an address in seconds during a 911 call, which makes for a safer city. That is the way it was before wireless, which was safer. With wireless, you have to get GPS coordinates that are often protected by a private company if you want to track down a caller's location. It's just not safe or effective. Having a landline also allows a 911 caller to leave the phone off the hook, and 911 can record while searching for the address. This is important in cases of domestic violence, as the 911 center may be able to record an attack, and that recording could be used in court. The safest emergency system is a hardwired one, and the only way a city will get that in this day and age is to argue in court to take over control of the network. The cable providers are negligent, and they are also invested in wireless waves. It is not a total loss for them, as their streaming services will still be available through high-speed internet. The reporter says, "How is your fight with the state of Pennsylvania?" Mitch says, "As you may know, the state of Pennsylvania is fighting us on our implementation of the traffic app and our automatic ticketing speed limit signs. They are arguing that these are not legitimate form of law enforcement. I argue that the state has not been legitimately enforcing its laws since the building of the interstate highway system. This highway system is policed by the Pennsylvania state troopers that issue tickets to speeders and other violators. The state has willfully entrapped millions of motorists over the decades through its signage policy. It's simple. Anytime an entry ramp comes onto an interstate, there should immediately be a speed limit sign so that the motorist is informed. There are mile marker signs every tenth of a mile, but the state can't afford to put up the requisite amount of speed limit signs? This is entrapment, and we are taking on the state to be able to enforce the speed on the state highway systems that run through our city. In our model, we will have a speed limit sign on every entry ramp, followed by our automatic ticket system further down the highway. I am announcing this class action suit involving the state's policy of entrapment. Any motorist that has ever received a ticket from the state of Pennsylvania and kept their original ticket can seek damages in this case. If the state wants to fight us on our system of self-policing and citizen empowerment, then we will fight the state to recover every fine ever levied against a Pennsylvania motorist involving speed limitations." And that's the end of that chapter. Chapter 11. So, before I get to the advertisements, I always end each chapter by saying I've kept some ideas that I'd like to develop myself for a technology startup. I'm looking for computer science people to partner with me. I've saved some money to invest in the business side and would like to partner up with some computer science people to develop a social media platform designed to fight misinformation on the internet. You can contact me through my websites. There are contact forms at mitchformayor.com or plotm.com. And I'd appreciate hearing from you. And I can send you a description of the social media platform to see if you're interested. I also have an operating document and a document for investors. Look into French Creek Farms in Utica, Pennsylvania for family camping at its best. Come to Utica, Pennsylvania and have a drink at Krabby Kelly's Bar and General Store. Come to Krabby Kelly's for all your STDs. That's snacks, tobacco, and drinks. Stop by Liquor Burger in Incheon, South Korea and get yourself a drink. Do you have a logo or design you'd like to have screen printed or embroidered on a garment of clothing? Look no further than 542 Prints. Go to 542prints.com today. Don't forget to subscribe to Disability TV on YouTube. It's a YouTube channel, Disability TV. Subscribe today. Thanks for listening and tune in for the next chapter.